Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, where Anders Leo Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Hashtag Finance Master show. My name is Anders Leo Lindberg, and as usual, I'll be your host. Today, we have another fascinating guest. Rhea Grover is the CEO and co-founder of Sequence, an A16Z-backed AI-powered billing and quote-to-cash platform. Second-time founder, she exited her first company for $25 million, while her co-founder previously sold Onfido for $650 million. Sequence has grown 10x in the last 10 months, partnering with modern B2B finance and RevOps teams. Rhea brings deep expertise on scaling finance functions with AI, streamlining workflows from CRM to ERP, and rethinking the CFO tech stack for high-growth companies. Rhea, welcome to Hashtag Finance Master.
Thank you.
You're a second-time founder with a remarkable exit already under your belt. What inspired you to build Sequence, and what problem are you trying to solve?
So I guess you probably see this with many kind of second-time entrepreneurs, but often what you experience in your first journey kind of inspires you to then go tackle a problem that you've seen firsthand the next time. And this was very much the case for me and my co-founder. Previously we built B2B software businesses, primarily with a sales-led go-to-market motion, which meant our sales teams were signing custom contracts and, we deployed a wide range of pricing models from subscription to seat-based to usage-based pricing. And it was really hard to find great off-the-shelf kind of revenue tooling infrastructure to power that for us. We looked at Stripe, but Stripe is really best designed for self-serve PLG companies or companies with very simple kind of standardized pricing. And we kind of also looked at the sort of incumbent legacy competitor set and found that products in this space for subscription management could typically be sort of 9 to 12 month deployment times, pretty rigid and inflexible with respect to modeling different pricing models, and felt like there's a whole swathe of the B2B economy, particularly kind of software businesses, who either end up managing the order to cash workflow very manually, end up building things in house, which is massive distraction and can be very expensive to build and maintain, or just working with a whole set of kind of disjointed tools to do kind of different elements of this workflow. So something for CPQ, something for billing, something for revenue recognition. That kind of leads to this problem of disjointed data and siloed data. So we thought there was a kind of really great opportunity to build something that, can give finance teams the ability to kind of collect revenue for any pricing structure, any contract structure, and achieve a very kind of flexible sort of modular toolkit that allows them to deploy in days as opposed to, several months. And so as we started talking to customers, realized that actually this wasn't just a problem that we had experienced in our own businesses. Actually, many finance teams and CEOs kind of have this challenge where they just don't have the right toolkit to manage their revenue against the different sort of pricing models or go-to-market motions their team is deploying.
Yeah, and I think that's, if you sell things, you think like as long as you've made the sale, then everything is good, right? But there's so much more that needs to be managed afterwards. So it's good to hear there are tools like Sequence out there that can help out. And, I'm a first-time founder, so I haven't founded a second company yet. So I can clearly relate to the fact that you learn a lot of things when you found a company, and you almost have to build another one just because you want to utilize all the things that you've learned. And it's similar to, I've also built a house once, not with my bare hands. I had someone to do it, right? But you learn so much going through that process and you feel like you need to build a second house. So it's good to hear that you've taken all those experiences with you as well. So I'm sure Sequence is not saying anything bad about your previous companies, but I'm sure it's even better now for all the experiences that you're bringing into it.
Definitely. And not just obviously on kind of thinking about a problem space to tackle. I think, you learn a lot about what great talent looks like and how to attract and nurture great talent. And yeah, many, many other kind of lessons that you can sort of port over to the next one.
Yeah, 100%. So you've worked with finance and RevOps teams scaling from 10 to 100 million in annual revenue. So what are the biggest challenges you see finance leaders face on that growth journey?
Yeah, I mean, today, many companies scaling through from 1 to 100 million ARR at kind of unprecedented rates. And I think what we typically see is, you know, in those early days where you start scaling your revenue, you have a lot of iteration on your pricing models and kind of go-to-market motions as you're figuring things out. And there's a lot of emphasis put on empowering the sales team to really be able to kind of get deals over the line, do what it takes to win customers. And so like all the effort and emphasis tends to be on, you know, kind of having a lot of flexibility in your go-to-market and less so on making sure you have the downstream tooling to actually, you know, bill against those pricing models, you know, achieve the sort of automation in revenue management with invoicing and making sure you're kind of recognizing revenue correctly. You have the right tax software in place, et cetera. So I think you tend to see like maybe a little chaos on the sales side where things are moving very quickly, and actually the solution on the finance team side tends to be, you know, we're there to service what our sales team are doing, and we'll, you know, pick up whatever essentially gets thrown over the line to us. And truthfully, the reality on the ground tends to be that these things end up being done pretty manually. You know, we have stories of finance teams who are literally maintaining a spreadsheet with a different tab for every customer with their contract terms, you know, manually invoicing at the end of the month. And maybe this works for kind of your first 10 or 20 customers. It really starts to become quite error prone and very time consuming as you scale beyond that. And so, you know, we see, you know, month end close can be pretty delayed, pretty high revenue slippage because, you know, there is, you know, you just missed up, you know, upgrading a seat mid-cycle, or you haven't, you know, fully accounted for a customer's change in usage. And especially with some of these more advanced kind of pricing models that we see, whether it's usage or outcomes-based pricing, you need the right infrastructure in place to be able to track that. So I think when it comes to the finance stack, you'll typically see, you know, in the journey from 1 to 10 million ARR, you know, of course, a company will have an accounting software or an ERP. They'll probably typically kind of adopt a spend management platform to sort of manage expenses and bill pay. And I will say we're now seeing with respect to our product suite in terms of kind of revenue tooling, I think a lot of companies are adopting that earlier in their scaling journey because actually they anticipate scaling very quickly and they don't want to be at sort of 5-6 million ARR plus without proper, you know, infrastructure to track and manage revenue, to collect revenue accurately, and to really be able to iterate on their go-to-market motion. And so, yeah, I think things are shifting as companies are scaling faster, becoming multi-product suites more quickly. And with that, obviously, as they adopt AI, you know, probably implementing sort of usage-based pricing more rapidly. And so all of this, I think, does prompt the need to look at kind of quote to cash billing revenue software earlier in the life cycle.
Yeah, and you know, going from 1 to 10 or 10 to 20 or 20 to 100, I mean, there's such a big difference. So how often should companies actually expect to change their tools to keep up with the scaling journey, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think, you know, there are some tools you'll commonly see as companies surpass a certain revenue threshold, they will look to swap out. You know, a classic example is sort of moving from QuickBooks or Xero to NetSuite. But we look to support companies through that end-to-end scaling journey. So, you know, a company could adopt us at 1 million ARR and scale with us to 100 million plus. You know, if you're selecting the right tools on the, you know, revenue side, on the kind of AP and spend side, like, you know, they should be able to kind of scale with you through multiple rounds of growth. One thing I will say is, obviously, we talk to a lot of CFOs, and I think one trend I definitely see is CFOs are looking to do two things. One is scale with leaner teams through to that 100 million ARR journey, you know, better software, consolidated software, fewer tools in the finance stack for a leaner team to kind of work with. AI and automation, obviously, kind of supercharges a finance team with the support of digital labor. I'm sure we'll kind of get to that in this conversation. But I think that also kind of gives the opportunity to scale through those milestones with leaner teams. And you know, what I hear all the time from CFOs as well is, if we're conducting a lot of these processes manually, we're spending the entire month focused on operations. You know, it's half the month to month end close, and then you're doing it all over again. Whereas actually, you know, you want to free up that time for, you want to use best-in-class software to automate as much as the operations as you can, and free up that sort of lean finance team's time to look at more strategic opportunities and really kind of then empower the rest of the team with the right data, et cetera.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. But let's try to move into the more specifics and look at the quote to cash, which is where also Sequinix is doing great work. So often the quote to cash gets less attention than, for instance, procurement or payables. So why is it that the accounts receivable historically has been the, let's call it, unloved child of the CFO office?
Yeah, it's a great question, and actually partly why we're motivated to tackle this opportunity. So if you think about AP and kind of payables, you know, this is typically a fairly one size fits all thing. You know, the way one company manages payables typically can tend to be quite similar, and you know, to another company. You get an invoice, you know, you want to queue it up, you want to review it, and pay it as seamlessly as possible. And I think, you know, over the last 5-10 years, we've seen great automation and technology really serve as that workflow to make it super easy to pay your invoices. You know, literally, you forward an invoice into an inbox, this gets uploaded, you use OCR, now LLMs, to kind of extract that invoice data, and finance teams can kind of pay in one click. Receivables has not had that kind of automation, particularly upstream in the workflow. You know, billing is not one size fits all. Every company has different pricing, different contract terms that they leverage. And a lot of the incumbents in the billing and AR space, you know, we talked about these sort of 9-month plus deployments, can be really hard to actually model your own business model into the required kind of billing, I guess, sort of billing models that you need within some of these kind of incumbent software platforms. And so I think there's a lot of friction on adoption. It's not as easy as just, you know, adopting a bill pay solution and starting to forward your invoices. It feels like a difficult product to adopt, a ton of upfront work. I think, frankly, that makes it has created some friction in adoption for finance teams adopting an AR tool. We're really changing that. We're sort of making it as easy as payables. You know, so your sales team sign a contract, you forward it into Sequinix. Sequinix extracts the data so that finance teams can literally look at this billing subscription and start billing a company for you know, whatever sales have sold, and automatically kind of issue invoices against that. We see that upstream contract record as holding the information that powers all of these downstream revenue operations. So you can not only automate billing, you can you know, automate workflows like dunning, chasing unpaid invoices, revenue recognition, which can also be something that's very painful for finance teams, you know, typically done in spreadsheets when you have these contract edge cases that they need to solve for. And so we've actually tried to almost mimic how simple that workflow is on the bill pay side to make it really, really easy for finance teams to, for us to meet them where they are. You know, they don't have to think through how to model their pricing and how to kind of set up each of these components. They can literally kind of share their existing contracts in the business with us and, you know, within a week or two, get going automating this kind of entire end-to-end workflow. And so I think for that reason, it's been the unloved child of the CFO office, but, you know, there are us and, you know, other teams out there really trying to change that.
Well, that's great to hear. And I think my experience working in finance functions in different companies has also been that it's been more difficult for finance people to work with the commercial part of the business, compared to the operational part of the business, where it's more cost than the procurement cycle, and maybe it's more simple. So what you're saying here is also that the commercial side tends to just be more complex. So maybe you face more resistance trying to work with them, especially if you don't understand how they work. So getting a tool that kind of understands natively how commercial teams work, almost regardless of the company that you're in, can actually be hugely, hugely helpful and maybe lower the resistance to implement a tool like this. But man, let's stay on this. So where are the biggest inefficiencies or pain points you see in their CRM to ERP handoff today, and how does Sequence try to address them?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, very much what we're actually tackling here is unification of that sales to finance workflow and synchronizing kind of data between that CRM and ERP and kind of filling that workflow in between. So kind of some of the friction points that we see today in many teams' workflows, you know, sales will sign a contract and finance will often only get a view of that once it's been closed. Whereas, you know, many finance teams express a desire to have a workflow where they get to review or sometimes in some cases approve a quote or a contract before it gets submitted so that they can kind of ensure that, you know, the right guardrails and pricing sort of margin guardrails are met. And so that's sort of one area. The other is actually just finance being in the loop with all the new sales and upsells that happen. You know, you can imagine getting to month end, you need to now issue invoices against all of these customers. As a finance team, you need to know exactly what all of the sellers have actually sold. You know, maybe upsells happen. Maybe actually a customer was delayed in their onboarding or had a bad experience. So a credit note has to be issued for that customer, or you're going to actually kind of discount pricing further. There's a ton of this like kind of back and forth where finance are trying to ascertain that information either by going into a Salesforce or, you know, pinging different members of the sales team. And, you know, someone's on holiday, so you miss, like really, you just miss billing for an upsell that happened because you're not getting that information in a streamlined way. And, you know, even for sales teams, I think sales teams are really focused on everything that it takes to kind of get that deal to the closing line, but are often not great at updating deal records in Salesforce to make sure the exact product information and pricing structures are recorded there. So finance are often kind of digging around for this information. One of the benefits of Sequence is when we pull in contract data, we also push that data back into the CRM. So you also have a perfect kind of record of all of the commercial terms that were sold in the contract, and that should match up and marry up to what is ultimately synced into the ERP. And just kind of one last point, obviously finance are downstream of the sales contract and this workflow. And so there's obviously a lot of benefits to finance for getting this information in a more streamlined way, but there's also a ton of benefits to sales because, you know, for example, finance teams are often calculating sales commissions. And so sales are actually really incentivized to make sure that they have accurate contract data and, you know, ultimately, obviously, usage data as well. So finance have an accurate view of exactly what revenue is being collected against every contract and customer that was sold so that they can, you know, calculate sales commissions more quickly, as an example. I think with retention as well, you know, new sales is one thing, but, you know, sales and success teams also need the data to understand how revenue is tracking against a contract in a world where you have fixed upfront subscriptions. Maybe you have perfect visibility on that deal value. In a world where you're charging based on usage or outcomes or even seats, actually the contract value changes significantly over the life cycle. Finance Sequence obviously captures that data for finance teams, but that's very useful to also push back to sales and CS teams so that they can use that to drive the right upsell or renewals when they come about. So I really believe more synchronization between the commercial function and the finance teams leads to, you know, far superior outcomes for the business on all fronts. And ultimately, you know, revenue is the lifeblood of a business. It's really important this is tracked accurately and that data is then funneled to different parts of the business that need it.
Yeah, so it really sounds like there's an incredible many opportunities of value creation and value realization here. And that's no surprise to me at all, because we did some events with a commercial excellence consulting company, I think this year and last year as well, around pricing for finance. And they had a pricing staircase where you show how it goes from, I think it was from list price to what you actually get in the bank. And let's say you have 1,000 in your list price, maybe you only get 700 in the bank. I think that's probably not unrealistic, right? Because you give discounts and then you give this way, you give that away. And then at the end, you have to write something off and so on and so forth. And there's just very little time spent on this staircase compared to the cost elements that you see. And so having tools and visibility that helps not just the sales, but also the finance team kind of manage all these steps here and really bring about how much value I've been losing. Because I can maybe say, okay, we were supposed to, our list price is 1,000 and I can see 700 in the bank. Is it good or bad? I don't know. But what happens in between? I need to know that in order to be able to address it.
Absolutely.
And so I think it was like, it was 20 plus steps at least where value could be lost, or you can have revenue leakage along the way. And of course, it differs from company to company. But is that also what you see with some of your clients, that they actually suddenly discover all sorts of opportunities to either fix revenue leakages or maybe shore up some of their terms so that they don't give too much away and so on?
Absolutely. I mean, as you say, you know, just even having the visibility to track what all those price variants are, the extent of kind of discounting, absolutely enables you to sort of spot opportunities to grow your revenue and allows that finance team to play that strategic role in, you know, empowering the commercial function to sort of see, you know, see these things and correct for them in pricing and go-to-market strategies. We also have some other really like tangible examples of how customers have literally just reduced revenue leakage and grown revenue pretty much overnight. So one example is, you know, we have a customer, very large fintech that prices based on seats, and they were previously using Stripe, where essentially, you know, they would add a customer would add a seat mid-month, but they actually would only kind of increase the subscription value at the end of the month to account for that extra seat. So there's, you know, a part of the month, 15 days, 20 days of the month, where that one seat upgrade has not been accounted for. It hasn't been prorated up. If you imagine this across many customers in the business, all of whom are naturally adding seats and usage kind of mid-cycle, there's a ton of missed revenue not being captured there just by virtue of not having the infrastructure to increase and bill for that additional seat in real time. And so, you know, that's a very tangible example of where the company, you know, literally kind of increased their revenue by seven figures plus overnight because they were able to now in real time bill for that incremental seat. And you know, something like that is pretty impossible to handle manually. Like, there's just no way, you know, finance team can get notified of that and update that subscription themselves. And so this is where like automation can play a great role. The right infrastructure can play a great role in making sure that you're really capturing every sort of dollar of revenue associated with a contract. But then there's obviously also what you shared, which is the analytics and the visibility that can give you to actually optimize your pricing further.
Yeah, so kind of staying on that topic, because obviously, you know, everyone's talking about AI and how that can impact things. So can you maybe share an example of how AI has actually moved the needle in billing or AI workflows, or, you know, some of the things that you work with your clients?
Yeah, love talking about this and can talk about it all day. You know, we obviously play in a part of the tech stack where there is this kind of repetitive monthly manual work that happens. And we think, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for various, you know, domain task focused agents to take on some of this work for finance teams. And particularly, you know, because we have this proprietary data set, we have this contract data set, those agents can work with that to kind of fulfill specific tasks. So a few examples of agents that we have launched or are launching in sequence. The first is what we call our contract intake agent. So when a new contract is signed, or a new upsell or renewal is signed, that agent will go and get that contract, will, you know, upload it, will notify the finance team that a new contract is in, will extract the terms of that contract, you know, using LLMs. If it wants the finance team to review something, it will pull in the finance team to review. you can see side by side exactly what the AI has done, what fields it's extracted from the contract. And that really enables a finance team to do, to kind of click one button and start billing the customer. We also have a Dunning agent that we'll be launching soon, which is helping, you know, is your kind of digital companion to help with cash collection. So chasing, you know, chasing late payments, indicating to the finance team, you know, where things have aged substantially and suggesting a strategy to recover that. And the thing about Dunning is that, again, it's, you know, you can build a kind of straightforward workflow which says send a reminder one day after, 7 days after. But to really kind of collect cash successfully and bring that DSO down, you need a bit more of a nuanced approach. And agents are great for that. You know, your communications with all customers are not going to be the same. The customer that hasn't paid you for 5 months, you're probably going to deploy a different strategy to, or, you know, some of your high value customers, you might want to adopt a kind of softer tone with versus maybe another customer segment. And so with this Dunning agent, you know, you're going to be able to, you know, fine tune this agent, give it your own business context so that this agent is almost operating like another member of your finance team to chase unpaid invoices and keep finance teams in the loop. And we kind of have this interface and sequence where you can, you know, call it a watchtower, but you can really review all the work that the agents are actually doing. And so there's a kind of full audit trail of exactly, you know, what work they're doing, what emails they've sent. And again, we'll pull you in when needed. And then another agent that we are also launching that we're very excited about is what we call our revenue recognition agent. So in sequence, you know, we will automatically produce journal reports off the back of contracts and billing data that we see in sequence. But what we often see is finance teams really want to double check and sense check that the revenue recognition treatment is correct, particularly when you have, you know, these complex pricing structures. And so, you know, what we sometimes see finance teams doing is literally dragging a contract into GPT and saying, can I sense check that, you know, my deferred revenue schedule is correct for this? And so we decided to productize that and bring it into the product where you can essentially get full transparency on exactly how journal entries were created, exactly how, you know, we have done the revenue recognition treatment for a certain contract. And then if a human operator wants to make an adjustment, it can just ask the agent to make an adjustment. And this context-aware agent can then write into the software to make that journal entry adjustment. And so these are just like some very tangible examples. Another one is an invoice review agent where it will do a full review of all the invoices, sense check for any anomalies. So that, you know, the finance user doesn't necessarily have to kind of go in and check everyone before sending them out. And so, yeah, all very tangible examples of how humans can be assisted in, you know, some of the elements of this workflow with agents taking on some of the work.
I know those are some great examples. I like how you have taken the agent approach, right? Because clearly that's what we need rather than having to, let's say, figure things out ourselves and then just automate something that we actually don't know if it works well or not. So kind of the whole agentic AI is really, yeah, I guess that's what everyone is pushing right now. But maybe if you're a company yourself, it's going to be a struggle to build it. So I always tell people and companies that I speak to, say, you know, don't try to build things yourself. Wait for your tool provider to actually create these things. And what I hear from your ears is that you're about just almost spitting out agents by the minute, right? There are all sorts of different tools that can help. And I really also like the fact you mentioned about the oversight, right? Because that there's always going to be trust issues, right? And you're always going to need have this oversight or controlling layer. So the ability to see what's going on at the moment and what contracts are we having under just came in and what are we processing at the moment? Are there some really big ones where maybe I should just go in and just do a sanity check and all these things? I think that is very, at least very much needed in these years where we are seeing so many new AI products come out, but we haven't necessarily worked with too many yet. So the whole trust issue, of course, is paramount here. So
I mean, I think control and accuracy obviously really, really matters in this domain. And nobody wants the black box with AI. You don't want, you know, a bunch of automation and AI doing things and you have no idea what's doing. So we've really over-indexed on that transparency where, you know, if you configure an agent in Sequence to take on work, you can see exactly what that agent is doing, exactly what fields it's extracted, or exactly what it's checked and what its findings were, exactly why it's recognizing revenue in a certain way. And I think this is important for two reasons. One is obviously to give the confidence to the user that the work it's doing is accurate and robust, but also with this human and agent interaction, you know, you can essentially, like, you're training that agent to take on more autonomously over time. So, like, you know, you might want to review every contract at the outset, but over time, you know, when you see that this agent is learning from your contract structures and extracting things, you might want to kind of step away from that. And I think that's very exciting for coming back to that point of being able to build to 100 million ARR plus mm-hmm. with very lean teams.
Yeah, no, it is very exciting. And let's stay on that note and look at the tech stack, but maybe move a bit more to the future. I mean, you've spoken to countless of professionals, and I'm sure finance professionals as well, in the last 18 months, also as part of building a Sequence. So what does the modern CFO tech stack look like today from what you've seen and all the conversations you've had?
Yeah, great question. So definitely a drive towards consolidation and fewer tools. I think, you know, one solution, well, you have your ERP, and then you have kind of one solution for managing spend, payables, expense management. And a lot of the kind of modern tools in that space will also help manage procurement, although at scale, we sometimes see procurement spin out into a different product. One tool to manage revenue and kind of that full end-to-end order to cash workflow. And, you know, with a tool like Sequence, you can also manage both a self-serve and sales-led go-to-market motion within that one product. So yeah, one tool for spend, one tool for revenue. If you're sort of selling into the US, often you'll need a kind of tax software to automate sales tax calculations. We integrate with and work with some great players like Anroc, Numeral, and others. And then sort of FP&A is another kind of category where, depending on kind of stage of company, but, you know, typically sort of 10 million ARR plus, we typically see teams adopt an FP&A tool. And again, there's some great kind of AI native players in that space, sort of at the smaller scale kind of tools like Runway and Equals. And then I think as we see companies scale, adopt kind of products like Pigment. But really, you know, you should be able to run with a tech stack that has, you know, four or five products, and that's it across your suite. And this obviously creates way less overhead and way less work having to stitch together these different products to speak to one another.
Yeah, no, I went to a big SAP conference earlier this year, and of course, SAP being big as they are and so forth, they can also do things that maybe most tech companies cannot. But they were trying to say we are moving from best of breed to best of suite, where of course they would have everything in their suite to manage everything, which of course maybe is not for all companies, but you know, it just speaks to that consolidation of tools that you're talking about, and say the fewer tools you have, the more manageable it also gets, and the easier it probably also gets to leverage AI on your data, because it doesn't come from 100 different sources where, right. Yes, let's say in an ideal world, you know, everything just works, but too often the data is a mess, right? It becomes from too many sources. So if you consolidate on that and get a more uniform approach to your data management, then AI will be much more helpful. So I think that really just speaks to the same trend here.
Yeah. And I mean, you'll always see, like, the ERP, you know, has modules, you know, billing and, you know, some accounts payable module. But I think it's really helpful to have a proper, robust kind of spend and payables platform for AP, a proper, robust kind of revenue management, order to cash platform for revenue, because you're then building a very sophisticated revenue graph with, you know, that holds contract data, billing data, invoicing data that you can, as you say, leverage with AI in very powerful ways. And so we see, you know, we obviously integrate with ERPs very closely and natively, and ultimately all of your data should end up there, but we don't necessarily see them as best in class for some of the more operational workflows that you have to conduct either on the AP or the AR side.
No. And as I said, you know, SAP can probably do what most other companies cannot, right? So it was not to say that, let's say, all the ERPs are best at anything of everything, so to speak. So it was just to share kind of their storyline on the consolidation of tools, right? So just speaking a bit more about AI here, you know, where do you see AI having the most immediate and practical impact across finance workflows?
Yeah, I mean, I think like best, like AI native kind of new age finance tools will leverage AI in the right places within their software suite. And that's not to say AI should be leveraged everywhere. So, you know, some examples, you know, I see the bill pay companies like Ramp, who will auto categorize transactions as an example. And, you know, this obviously kind of is a very focused task that finance teams have to do. That the AI can kind of start kind of by suggesting categorization, then eventually over time learn to categorize automatically. I think, you know, some of the examples I shared with you, like Dunning, is a very good workflow for AI to take on, and actually really kind of sits very nicely on top of a product that is already producing your invoices, where you can already see the invoice data. I think there are many examples, you know, with FP&A, like you can see agents, you know, supporting with insights that a finance team can garner from the data set, and potentially actually kind of speeding up time to sort of forecasting and building models. There's some really interesting things happening there with kind of natural language based prompts to change how quickly you can run different scenarios. I think ultimately, the devil is in the detail, and you will see probably a bunch of players in the finance suite, you know, throw a chatbot on top of their existing products and sort of say that they're AI-fied. But really, where I think the meaningful lift will come is where you focus on very specific tasks or very specific work, and you know, you can train and fine tune an agent to take on that particular work fed with all the context and nuance that it needs to do it. And that's where I think we will see, you know, truthfully, like a new age of companies built in a very, very different way to the legacy incumbent set that came before.
No, I think that that makes a lot of sense. So you spoke earlier about how CFOs are looking to scale their company with leaner finance teams. So, you know, if we look ahead in the next 3 to 5 years, how do you see AI and automation reshaping the way that CFOs structure their finance teams and processes for that matter?
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of some interesting kind of visual diagrams that come to my mind where, you know, today, if you look at, you know, a typical kind of finance team where there's, you know, the CFO and then VP of finance and then, you know, and sort of an AR operator, an AP operator, often actually multiple people in each of those divisions, somebody in FP&A, I actually think you'll almost move to a world where like everybody in that team is quite strategic, and the operators are kind of agents who are operating across these different categories, where really these more strategic team members are just kind of reviewing agent work and prompting or fine-tuning agent work to be done. You know, maybe that's a few years out still, but you can kind of imagine that typical model of, you know, 5 people in the AP team and 5 people in the AR team. Like, I think that might fall away, and actually you'll have a smaller group of more strategic operators who are sort of working with consolidated software tools and reviewing agent work. But I think, you know, if we think about kind of where this is going to go in the next 3 to 5 years and how these kind of teams are going to evolve, like it's really incredible, like working in this space, because, you know, even in the span of a year, we are seeing, you know, these LLMs change so dramatically in the work that they're taking on. And, you know, I think finance teams are typically thought of as maybe relatively conservative and not as open to kind of AI tooling as other teams, but I really think that's changing as well. And I think the key thing is to look for the products that you believe are going to have the roadmap over the next 3 to 5 years to really embrace the opportunities for automation that come with AI.
Yeah, no, I think that just the last point you made there, Ria, is really interesting for many companies, because in the past, you really just look for a software tool that could solve your challenges of today. But because everything is moving so fast now and AI is just another element to that, you really also need to look at the product roadmap ahead for that company that you're selecting if you have three or four competing companies. Because if the roadmap is not impressive, it might solve your problem of today, but it's going to give you 10 headaches tomorrow, right? So I think that's a really interesting element for companies looking to get new software, that they really need to consider that, which of course can be a challenge because they might not be software developers, of course, but then get some advisors that can help on you know, maybe stress testing that product roadmap, because this is going to be much more key now than it was maybe 5 or 10 years ago.
And I think not only will the org structures change, you know, with some agents, particularly potentially as headcount as opposed to people, but I also just think like the way we think about this work happening will really change. So today, you know, there's this week-long period, maybe more for some teams, to kind of close the books. And that's partly because kind of work is happening as humans hand over work between each other. It's kind of happening sequentially, right? So like, you know, you kind of get the contract in and you're reviewing it, and then you need to ping the sales team to confirm something, and then you get it back. And, you know, there's bottlenecks and time lags created between each of these steps. You know, same with expenses. You get a new invoice and you need to ping someone in the team to understand what this is for and get the right data, you know, to populate the field before you can pay it out. I think with a move towards more inbuilt automation and kind of agentic work within these software products, it's almost like a finance team will have all of this work happening in parallel over the course of the month. So you kind of get to month end and actually you're pretty much there. Like the books are pretty much kind of ready to close, you know, the day after or even that same day. And so this kind of shift from sequential work where there's a bunch of time lags built in towards kind of more parallel work, I think, becomes possible.
Yeah, I think it's called kind of like almost like the continuous close, right? You can basically do the work, whatever is required for in your business cycle, so you're not stuck in those kind of set cycles that you have today. So really a lot of exciting things to come for sure. Just one final question, Ria, here. So on the Hashtag Finance Master show, we define a finance master as someone who helps build a world-class finance function. So Ria, how does your work at or with Sequence contribute to that mission?
Well, that is our mission, to help finance teams build with a world-class finance function. And we want to build a category leader in revenue, quote-to-cash, billing automation. You know, we want teams to be able to deploy quickly, adapt their go-to-market and pricing as they scale. And this from, you know, and for finance to really be able to sort of adapt with billing, invoicing, revenue recognition, revenue data, revenue reporting, as companies go through those scaling cycles.
That's great to hear. And as we talked about during today's show, there's a lot of value potential in really upgrading here, because there's a lot of lost revenue from the list price to whatever goes into the bank. So Ria, thanks a lot for being on the show. If people want to reach out to you or learn more about Sequence, what's the best way to do that?
You can come to our website, sequencehq.com, and request a demo. Or you can email me personally, Ria@sequencehq.com. And Ria spelled R-I-Y-A, but very happy to connect you with someone in our team.
That's great to hear. So Ria, thanks a lot for being on the show. It's great to have you here. Definitely, Sequence is in a space where we need more help as finance teams. So it's great to see how you brought all your experience into building this tool, and that you're just, you know, creating all these agents that we can help to do work that we just, it was manual before and paper not, perhaps not even being done. But that's really, really great to hear. And also thanks to all the listeners out there. It's great to have you tune in every week, whether you're listening on your podcast or you're watching this on the YouTube channel. Go subscribe, share your opinion as well. We'd be happy to have that. But with that, we hope to see you again next week on the Hashtag Finance Master Show. So bye for now.
You've been listening to Hashtag Finance Master. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting.